Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
All right, welcome to the Silver Screen and Roll podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Harrison Fagan and that terrible fedora. Why?
Because, Anthony, you know, the more things change in 2021, like we got to stick with the things that make us happy. And that's what I've learned. And, you know, the fedora makes you happy. It does make me happy. And also, like, I mean, you don't want to see the hair situation I got going on, like, several months into it. It's probably been almost a year since I got a haircut. So, yeah.
Dang.
So I have like four hairs at the front now.
You trying to like split them literally?
Beat you
like
to it.
Yeah. I know you and I split hairs while you and I talk oftentimes, but like you're literally sitting there with a knife.
I've doubled hairs. That's where I'm at.
Oh man, a year. I know you know, this particular situation scares you and your sensibilities more than most.
I did like a haircut at home in like March, so not exactly a year, but like.
Right, but you haven't gone to get a haircut.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
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 I will not until I have the vaccine.
Yeah. I went about a few months and it was just, I could feel the hair on the back of my neck and.
Your looks are the only thing you have going for.
Literally.
So I have brains.
That's why I don't have much going. All right. So today's show, we are going to start by talking about, you know, with today being the anniversary of Kobe's passing, Harrison and I are going to kind of remember him in our own way to start with. And we're going to start with things that we didn't know about Kobe that we have learned in the last year. And actually, it's actually kind of astounding how much that we've been able to learn. It's kind of what happens when somebody dies, right? You get all kinds of people coming out and telling stories that paint their own picture of their relationship with the guy or the person. So that's kind of what we're going to talk about in the first part here. And then from there, you know, because it is the Kobe's passing and because he is kind of an industry unto his own, or was one, well, still is one, clearly. We were kind of put off, I think, is a way I think I'm safe in saying it, right? That yeah. We were kind of put off by some of the coverage today and the response to it today, even while Vanessa's asking people, hey, please don't make this too big of a deal. It's already difficult enough to go through this without turning and seeing his face everywhere and her face everywhere, Gigi's face everywhere. And then from that, we're going to segue over to basketball talk, and we're going to do so awkwardly because there is no other way to do so. So let's go ahead and start, though, with what we have learned. I'll go ahead and start because I think I have a pretty good one here. But it really, like, I knew that he liked pushing people, right? Like that was, remember the Kobe challenge on Twitter, right? That was something that he really enjoyed doing.
Yeah.
And he was so much better at it than like Shaq, for example, who just hops on national TV and says people suck, yeah. and hopes that they take that the right way. But we already knew that Kobe enjoyed inspiring people, but the random texts that people would get from an unknown number would said like it was Kobe Bryant. And he wanted to talk to them about things and the wide variety, like the spectrum of people who were getting these texts is so cool to me. It's so cool to me. And the impact that he had on greatness all over the map, whether it's sports or entertainment or industry, whatever, what have you. He wanted to see people. It's why it really kind of highlights or makes you understand, you know, to the fullest extent, why like Shaq annoyed him or why Dwight Howard the first time around annoyed him, right? The idea of unfulfilled talent or unfulfilled promise drove Kobe insane. And so when he saw promise, he wanted to do whatever he could to reach out and try to help that person fulfill whatever prodigious talent that we're talking about here. So that was so cool to me, the various stories that people came out with and all the people who came forward with like, he called you? Oh, he called you. You got a call too? Did you get a call, Harrison?
I never got a call from Kobe himself. I did.
How about that? Yeah. That's a bummer.
Oh, you got a Kobe challenge. That's good for you.
Yeah, it's to lose weight. I failed.
I think you're the first person to ever admit that you failed a Kobe challenge. I feel like everybody else has come out and they've said something that like he told them to do that like turned their life around. And you're like, yeah, he told me to lose weight. I didn't.
I'm working on it. I'm still trying. Yeah. Like some people take U-turns longer than others.
Yeah. Well, also like some people get easier challenges than others. And
yeah. Giannis, get MVP of the league. Done. Anthony, go lose like 5 pounds.
Anthony, go carbless. No. Not yet.
Well, what sticks out to you over the last year or so that you've learned about the guy that you didn't necessarily know heading into this year? Which it sucks that it takes this to learn about him, but here we are.
Well, but this is kind of what happens with death, right? Like, I mean, we as human beings don't always do a great job of giving people their flowers before their funeral. Yeah. Like, and like a big thing that like, you know, in society is like, you know, when you go to a funeral or you go to a celebration of life or memorial or whatever you're calling it for someone, like people will tell stories that maybe no one outside of like their closest friends have heard about them before, but like, it's the way that we grieve. Like we try to remember the good times. And so, you know, these people never had, you know, a motivation to put like their interactions with Kobe out in the streets before this. And so like, I mean, there's a reason for it, obviously, but yeah, it is sad that like we only hear about these things afterwards. And both of mine are kind of along the similar line as yours. So like, I think number one is like in terms of pushing people is like how, like it wasn't just NBA players or entertainers or whatever, like his girls basketball team. Like we knew that he was really obviously involved in that, like, you know, starting the sports complex. Like he was, I think probably almost all of his Instagram posts post-retirement were about Gigi's basketball team and like stuff like that. So like we knew he was into it, but it's like, you never know really what kind of coach someone is. And obviously like, while he's alive, like he's, you know, reporters aren't going to descend on like this girls basketball team and ask them what's Coach Kobe like. And like, they aren't going to want to do those interviews because it's just weird. And like, he's trying to, you know, like not protect his image, but you know, he's a celebrity that still has interests and you're not trying to like let somebody pry into someone's personal business. But like afterwards, you know, it's been amazing to hear Zach Randolph, who I didn't even know his daughter was on Kobe's basketball team, and like talk about their interactions and like how they'd bond over, like they'd be sitting and watching these practices and games and like how Gigi played like Kobe and Zach Randolph's daughter played like him at like That's down so to like mean mugging at opponents and like, you know, post moves and getting upset with fouls that were too hard. And like Gigi's taking like nonsensical, like fadeaways sometimes and like stuff that, you know, it's like, oh, yep, that's Kobe's daughter. And like, you know, just like how much he clearly cared about that team though, like as people and how he was like Miran Fader, you know, our both of our friend who has come on the podcast a couple times, like wrote a great story for The Ringer today that I would encourage everyone to go read about Kobe, the basketball coach, and like just talking to these girls that were like on other teams in the league. And he'd like send them shoes and stuff like that because he respected their game and he could tell that they wanted to get better and he respected that. And like how he would bring, you know, these groups of kids from this league to go and like see, you know, Sabrina Ionescu with like her basketball team and like visit with them and visit with these college kids that like they're really looking up to, obviously. And like just that part of it. And then also like the story that stuck with me, you know, just as we all talk, like I know you and Pete have this talk a lot about like the current coverage of NBA media, and you and I are even going to talk about that to some degree on this podcast, but like The story that stuck with me, and I think part of this is my profession, but is last year when Zach Lowe wrote his obit on Kobe, and he talked about how Kobe wanted the coverage of the game to focus more on the game, and he was trying to find other like-minded people to talk about and encourage to do this X's and O's stuff, and to like people whose passion for basketball he respected. And it's not, frankly, it's not surprising that Zach Lowe was one of those people. And like just how passionate he was about making sure that in the soap opera stuff, people didn't lose track of like the actual beauty of the game. And that's something that's resonated with me a lot, and something that, like, you know, look, like, you know, I run a blog, like, I'm not every single story that I write is going to be about X's and O's, but I have tried to take more of that into my coverage as like a little bit of like, it was a little bit of a reminder of something I probably should have been doing anyway, but also a little bit as a tribute of like, you know, I think he was right about the way that the game should be covered to some degree. And this is a way to kind of pay homage to that. And look, I don't know that like Kobe would be a silver screen role reader, you know, or anything were he still around. But like, I'd like to think that the way that I'm approaching it is like hopefully something closer to what he wanted out of media. And that is like a standard that I try to strive for, is like, let's make sure that we're keeping the main thing, and focusing on basketball as much as we possibly can.
Yeah. I mean, when he retired, right, he had his choice of projects to put his name on and to really tackle. Right. And one of the things that he was really passionate about was that detail series on ESPN. Yes. And instead of becoming a voice on the jump, or instead of hopping on ESPN's, you know, pregame, postgame, halftime, you know, Sunday inside show, whatever, inside the NBA, like all of those shows would have welcomed him with open arms in a second. He wasn't interested in doing that. He wanted to focus on the basketball. He wanted to elevate the discussion of the basketball, and, you know,
more than you could do in 5 minutes as a talking head.
Well, also, like, yeah. When five of, you know, when 4 minutes and 30 seconds of those 5 minutes are spent on, you know, whether Giannis should stick it out in Milwaukee, you know, like, that's just, I find myself, yeah, I agree with you completely. That's a great thing to kind of, and it's narrowed to both of our focuses to, you know, don't get us wrong here, but it is something that I think, Kobe has been right about a lot. You know, he was well on his way to becoming a billionaire. It was going to happen sooner rather than later. And one of the things that I think that he can, you know, rest easy about being right about is because of the success of, like, you know, Pete's success, Silver Screen and Roll's growth, you know, my own show and what it has done. And you draw that out, Zach Lowe is the biggest voice in the sport, and he focuses heavily on the sport. And you can, you know, pick any number of people who focus on the sport whose success indicates that there was a hunger for that type of coverage.
Yes.
And Kobe knew it, and he wanted to tap into it. And unfortunately, he didn't get long enough to really see that through. So I guess it's, you know, on us to pick up that mantle and do that part of his legacy as well as we could. The part that I have trouble with,
speaking of not focusing on basketball,
like
the part, and things that are wrong with the media.
The part that I have a hard time watching take place is, like, today was a perfect encapsulation of the kind of coverage that I think Kobe would have had no time for. And the blatant grief mongering and the blatant attempts at just generating legacy by way of SEO that involved Kobe's name. Like, USA Today Sports got the brunt of everybody's annoyance and anger.
And we knew somebody was going to do it. We knew somebody was going to go like way over the line of what you should be doing today. And it was them. Like,
right. Well, yeah, but, yeah, but like that line only moved to that point because, like, where that comes from. So USA Today, for those of you who don't know,
because they deleted it once, yeah, like, yeah,
with the quickness. They sent out a series of tweets that were basically live tweeting minute by minute as it would have happened today. So if the helicopter would have gone down today, they were going like minute by minute of
here's
what
was going on right now a year ago, basically.
A year ago, yeah. Right. Obviously, people didn't take well to that. That was the exact, by the way, kind of thing that Vanessa like specifically asked for. Like, hey, don't make us relive that part of this. You know, like,
yeah,
it's one thing to say, like, you know, a team out there in the NBA, you know, putting up a 24 at midcourt or something like that, which she also, by the way, wasn't comfortable with either. But this was like, this was graphic reliving and going through that all over again in ways that I, you know, she and her family didn't want.
No news value either. Like, why? What did we need to know?
There was nothing added. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was nothing added to it. They said that they, you know, so I actually happen to have their explanation for it up. Earlier tweets shared reporting about the helicopter crash that killed Kobe Bryant and 8 others. It was our intent to share new reporting around the day's timeline. Our tweets came with no warning or context. We took down those tweets and regret the insensitivity of the content. the intent was to garner and generate any kind of engagement on the event itself. And like this idea that they were going to offer us something new. I've seen the tweets. There was nothing new in there. I didn't see anything new.
That's also what I kind of like. I didn't want to make this just a like, let's attack USA Today Sports, because obviously they messed up the worst, but they are not the only ones. Like, I can't tell you how many things I saw that were so clearly like people, like, I understand that everyone grieves in different ways and whatever, but like, when you're just like a national account with like no connection to Kobe whatsoever or whatever, and you're mm-hmm. just like tweeting like hashtag Mamba forever with like 4 photos of him and like Kobe, like you are essentially trying to get engagement off of human beings dying, and right. like there's no news value to it. You are not helping people like cope. You're not like, you are just like, this is sad, people will share because they are also sad, and you're like mm-hmm. capitalizing on grief. And look, like, maybe that is an overly callous way to look at it at times, but it's just like, there were so many either stories or posts of people like, you know, like, again, this is a year later. Like, we don't need to see the photo of the one time you met Kobe and it's like, oh, I'm so sad, but also look at this and here's mm-hmm. me and Kobe, or here's this time Kobe emailed me, or like whatever. Like, it's just like, it's one thing when we're all processing it in the week afterwards and everybody's trying to remember him and whatever. Like, it just feels different to me when you're essentially like, oh, it's been 1 year since that person died. Let me get some retweets. Like, and oh yeah, by the way, I knew them. Or oh yeah, by the way, like, I have access to Getty images and a photo of him and Gigi. And like, mm-hmm. I don't know. There was just like, look, I know that it's like, this is not like a hard and fast line, and there's, you know, degrees here and whatever, and everybody has different tastes and content and what they think is over the line and behind the, but the thing that stood out to me is something that you referenced of Vanessa feeling like she needed to post a week before yeah. telling people, like this was not day before, like, oh yeah, maybe I should get, this is like a week before of like, I yeah. know you all are working on some pretty messed up stuff, like, hey, maybe don't do that, and I'm going to give you plenty of time to see this, of like, just don't force us to relive that day. And like, that doesn't say really a lot to me about how respectful the coverage has been to this point. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not a great commentary on the state of like our press. And like, this is not me being a fake news guy. I just like, I'm willing to acknowledge their problems in sports journalism as well mm-hmm. as like, there are lots of strengths to it as well.
And we're not perfect either, by the way.
No, we are not. And like, I have made my share of mistakes, like, and like, but that was just the thing that bothered me the most today and was just the most disappointing, was to kind of see like what was essentially grief porn, like cascading across grief porn, clout chasing, like across the timeline still a year later. And that's like how we're going to memorialize. And again, like, I understand that this is like me just ranting at this yeah, point, well, but it's just something that bothers me.
I think like, on Locked On Lakers today, the Kamenetsky brothers came on, and I thought Andy made a really good point where he said, you know, basically like, ask yourself why you're posting this. Ask yourself why you're putting this out into the atmosphere. And like, for me, what I can only answer that for myself, but I basically would say, hey, is this adding to his memory? Is this adding to the experience of following this guy from start to finish? And and now beyond. And, you know, and those pictures of like, I saw somebody, you know, say like, quote this with your four favorite Kobe shoes. And it's like, you're doing a quote this on this guy.
Like, yeah.
We're doing a quote this with Craven to me.
And I don't want to, like, again, I don't want to spend too much longer on this, but like, it was stuff like that that just did really bother me. And I know bothered you as well. And like, also like, just some of the players that I, or the questions that I saw players across the league get asked over the course of this week. Like, I think sometimes we need to reevaluate our priorities, and like this is real trauma and these are human beings. And I understand that like their opinion and their reaction to things is newsworthy and relevant, but like, also like, is it worth subjecting them to trauma again and reliving a moment? And like, some of these guys really wanted to talk about certain aspects of this. So like, that's fine.
On it. Yeah. Like, when Marc Gasol says like mid question, I don't want to talk about this, you should pick up on it. You should recognize and maybe not ask a follow up on the subject and make it to the point where like Mark feels the need to apologize because his answer doesn't live up to your expectations. Whereas like Anthony Davis was very happy to talk about this stuff, you know? And when you can pick up on that vibe, like, you should, if you want to tug on that string and you see the reaction to the tugging on it, you gotta read the room. And it's tough. I know it's tough because there literally isn't a room nowadays, but it's just this goes for everybody at like that. Mark is the example that came to the forefront of my mind. There are examples all the way throughout the league of people who, you know, the only reason you're asking this is to get Kobe in your SEO. Like, that's it. I'm sorry, but if you're asking somebody in Philly about Kobe and that stuff, it's so that you can write for the Philadelphia audience and get Kobe in your title and your headline. And it's just, we're a year removed from this, and it was gross when he was alive, and it's even worse when he's dead.
Yeah, it's just, for me, the thing that I just go back to is, everybody grieves differently. And if you grieve by wanting to talk about it, then great. But like, we all, the royal we, have to read that room and understand and be and report empathetically, I think, is the thing that just like keeps coming. And like, and not everyone has to have a take. Like, I actually, that's what I wrote about today for Silver Screen and Roll, is just like my struggle to even come up with what all this means or even have a take on it at this point that hasn't been said. And I like, frankly, I just think that there were some takes out there that were just clearly like you trying to find a news peg for this. And yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Let's segue awkwardly. When we come back from the break, we are going to talk about some of the things that we have taken note of. Harrison, I think it's been a couple weeks since we talked. So there were a couple things from this Lakers season to this point that we feel the need to discuss.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
All right, so he's become a punching bag, at least on my show, because of his kind of general approach to the season to this point. But Anthony Davis, like, it's gotten to the point where everybody sees it, right? Everybody watching the game is seeing that, you know, he's getting out physicaled. Guys are getting offensive rebounds on him that normally wouldn't get offensive rebounds on him. He's settling on offense. He's just kind of and you know, some of this was we knew it was going to happen. We knew that Anthony Davis wasn't, you know, they just finished last season only a few months ago. So I, you know, I'm not saying I don't understand why it's happening, but I do think like when somebody is playing so clearly lower in terms of intensity, with such lower intensity than the players around him, like, it sticks out, especially with this Lakers team, given that they're playing hard enough to have the top defense in the league. And that's actually, Harrison, what I wanted to kind of run by you here is, how is it that the most talented defender in the NBA is kind of sleepwalking through the season, and yet the Lakers still have the top defense in the NBA? It's kind of, so there's either kind of two trains of thought to it, right? It's either we need to pay more attention and Anthony Davis is actually playing harder on defense than we're giving him credit for, or the other guys on the team are just picking up for him in ways that we weren't necessarily sure they could.
Or the third, you know, behind door number three is, you know, something that I think a lot of awards voters were a take that a lot of awards voters were sitting on last year. Are the Lakers better off defensively with Anthony Davis off the floor? I think it's time to start asking the question, like, Anthony, the on-off numbers, is Anthony Davis good at defense? Like, you know,
are you leaning to door number three? Is that what you're telling me right now?
No,
like if you had the three doors in front of you, you would just kind of try to peek under the door and see what's under there?
No, look, I think that as far as the defense goes, I think that part of it is that this team does it differently than than the last Lakers team. They are less physical. Like, there's no way around that. But they're quick. They generate turnovers. Like, you know, they aren't necessarily swatting shots at the rim, but they will force you to go over them and, like, try and take more difficult shots than maybe you would have, or alter your angle or do other things like that. And so I think that there's some of that. I think that some of it is that they haven't played the strongest schedule so far. They've played a decently difficult schedule. And I actually saw that, like, I think it was like higher up in strength of schedule than I actually thought it was.
But yeah,
basically, because I've watched these games and I was like, damn, all these teams suck. But I guess maybe they're like pretty
maybe
good.
They relative. Suck because they're playing the Lakers.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, I think there's some of that. And I also think, like, some of it is, you know, like, I think that there is, like, teams are going to, even if it doesn't necessarily look like Anthony Davis is stopping them, like, Anthony Davis is not a guy that you're going to go at. And so maybe you're going to other things in your offense, or, you know, you're trying other things that maybe, like, yeah, it works out sometimes and it looks bad when there are breakdowns, but, like, you're not going to be as successful as often. Like, sort of like, I forget which defender this was, but somebody wrote a really good story a year or two ago on, like, I wish I could remember who it was, but it was someone who was like one of the, and they basically found a stat that was like, you know, like, basically teams almost never ran plays near where this player was via like energy or sports view data or something like that. Like, they just didn't even want to be near him, essentially, or like have the ball. And I don't remember who it was. So I apologize.
Football for a while, that was Richard Sherman, where, like, exactly, he would be on, like, the side of the field and they just wouldn't mess with the right side of the field.
Like, or Revis Island, you know, like a really good shutdown corner where, like, you're just not even going to throw over there. And that's the best compliment that they can give you is that, like, they're not. And so, like, I don't think that is exactly what's happening with Anthony Davis, but I do think that maybe there is, like, I've been trying to think of unconventional ways that maybe they're just making this work. And, like, I mean, that's kind of what I've settled on a little bit, is just that. And also, like, maybe he is, like, he doesn't always look like he's trying the hardest, but he might just be so good that he's still finding ways to affect the game or to gum up possession. Like, I don't think that, I'm not as down on him. And look, this is not atypical for our relationship, but, like, I'm not as down on this, I think, as you are. And I'm certainly not concerned about it, because it very much, I am on the same page with you in that it does seem to be an effort and engagement thing. Like, I'm not like I don't think Anthony Davis is washed. Not that you're saying that, but, like, I think that he still, like, he can.
Although
turn
somebody asked me to say that Anthony Davis is washed, so he could turn his season around.
I mean, honestly, it's not the worst idea we've had on this show.
Yeah, I think for me, what it is, and Pete and I have talked about this, you and I have talked about this, is that, like, we just saw this guy play some of the best basketball that we have seen from that position in a really, really long time. And that took place only a few months ago. So with that being so fresh in our minds, we're sitting here saying, like, what just
that's
happened?
The thing. It was 2 months ago. Like, he's probably like, not everyone is a cyborg like LeBron and can just, like, turn back on again, you know? Like,
right. I'm just, you know, it's also tough, though, because, like, in terms of NBA bodies out there, like, yeah, LeBron has maybe the greatest NBA body of all time, but Anthony Davis isn't, like, freaking Shelton Shaq. Like, he's not built like, you know, or the inverse of that, right, is, like, rookie Brandon Ingram, who, like, gets pushed over by, you know, some breezes. So like, I don't know. I find myself saying, you know, on one hand, I enter this with an open mind. It might be that I'm too hard on the guy because of what we just saw a few months ago. It might also be that the Lakers, and Frank Vogel is known as a defensive coach, run a system that, so long as Anthony Davis isn't like actively hurting you or actively trying to score on you, the Lakers system is such that they'll be a pretty good defense. And then also, like, we got to credit the other defenders that the Lakers have on the team. Dennis Schroeder, for all that he's been struggling with, is much better defensively than I thought he was going to be.
He tries for sure. Yeah. Like, it's not always good, and it's not always, he doesn't always do the right thing, but he tries, and that makes up for a lot.
Situationally speaking, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is a pretty good defender. Kyle Kuzma has been trying a lot harder on defense this year. LeBron is defending his ass off. You know, you see the effort that LeBron brings on that end of the court. Marcus Saul's former defensive player of the year. And so for the 20 minutes that he's on the court, he's at least smart enough to be, you know, effective. And then you kind of go a little bit.
Just a really quick tangent. Marcus Saul is part of the answer here, right? Like, Marcus Saul, he is better defensively than people give him credit for because his lowlights look horrible. Like, it looks like if you were out there, like when he gets blown by, like, it looks bad. No one is disputing that. But I would say for most of the game, he does a really solid job with positioning, angles, having his arms up, like just smart, heady stuff, make it, you know, forcing a defense to make an extra pass that they don't want to make. Like, he is still a good, definitely above average defender when he doesn't get like 3 fouls in 3 minutes against the Cavaliers. But like, other than that, like, and look, everybody's had their low lights on defense this year, LeBron included and AD included. But like, Marc Gasol is on balance. Like, he is part of the answer here of why this hasn't mattered as much. The AD is not. And also, he's part of the answer in why it doesn't look like Anthony Davis is having as amazing of a defensive season. Because early on in the year, Anthony Davis, because Marc Gasol is like so ground bound and like so needs to kind of be around the rim in order to have effectiveness, like, you know, he could shuffle his feet occasionally, but that's not where he's going to make his bones. And Anthony Davis, like, I think at times, you know, is having to do work to make up for that, and at times was like having to chase guys around to make up for that. And that's like, you know, he can do that, but it's not going to look like it looked last year when him and JaVale or him and Dwight were just like patrolling and locking down the paint.
And then of the guys that I listed, I don't think I mentioned Alex Caruso.
No, you didn't. So does Anthony hate Alex Caruso?
In my opinion, like, is a top three, maybe, point guard defensively in the NBA. I think I can say that.
As long as you say top three, then like everyone will agree with you because everyone else may have like a different two, but they aren't like top three is like as high as you can go without sounding like an insane pick. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the Lakers are situated to where, and then like, I've been kind of pleasantly surprised by Montrezl Harrell's defense, especially on the perimeter. And you can kind of go down the list. Wes Matthews is a smart defensive player. I think he gets carried away sometimes and he forgets how old he is, and goes out there on the perimeter and tries a little too hard. But nonetheless, I think it's a team that can make up for this so long as Davis isn't actively hurting you. And he hasn't reached that point. Maybe on offense in some stretches where they keep throwing him the ball and all he keeps doing are these face up, hold the ball for 7 seconds, and then either pass the ball or shoot like a fadeaway mid-range jumper. Like, those don't really help the offense very much. But overall, it's hard to complain about a team that's sitting here at, what, 14-4, has the best defense in the league, and it has been pretty clearly the best team in the NBA. It's just because of how good everybody else is and because of how well everybody is playing, some of these things stick out more than most. And in this case, Anthony Davis, like, there was a stretch yesterday in the Cleveland game where he was doing the Rasheed Wallace, like, run from the top of one key to the top of another key. And he was just kind of like, waddling back and forth. This is 20, like, prime Anthony Davis that we're talking about this.
Look, first of all, I have a couple things to say. One of them is it might be hard to complain about this team, but when I texted you and I said, what do you want to talk about today? You found a way and to get that into the show plan. And second of all, like Anthony Davis was just being a selfless teammate, Anthony. He was, you know, LeBron got out of his way so that he could dominate in his hometown. Mm-hmm. And as they continue this hometown tour, you know, he just was trying to be a courteous teammate and space the floor so that LeBron had as much room as he wanted to take ridiculous fadeaway jumpers to say F you to whatever Cav Scout pissed him off.
Are there any Lakers from Philadelphia on the roster right now? On the roster. I know people are listening at home saying like, there is one.
Yeah. That is a good question. I mean, not that I can think of offhand.
Well, because just, you know, in case somebody goes off, in case like, you know, I can't think of anybody who might be from that area, but in case somebody goes off and Anthony Davis gets out of the way, it's just because of the hometown tour.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, see, Anthony Davis just has to, like, he found the solution. Like, he can load manage in games any night that someone is in their hometown. Like, he even did it in the second half in Chicago so that THT could get his turn.
There you go. All right, last thing before we get out of here. The Lakers are going to be playing the Philadelphia 76ers tonight or tomorrow by the time whenever you guys are listening to this. And I'm kind of curious, Harrison, is there anything in particular that you're looking for?
I mean, I called this on the Lakers exceptionalism pod that I did this weekend. We were talking about the upcoming schedule, and like I'm just calling my shot right here. Like, Danny Green's going to hit like 7 threes against the Lakers. Like 7 or 8, honestly,
yeah.
Because like it's going to be the revenge game thing. It's going to be the, like, this is karma for Lakers Twitter slandering him all the way like through the championship game and into the summer. And like,
yeah,
still now when he plays bad for the Sixers, like, and then he's going to have some really passive aggressive tweet about it after the game. And yeah, I mean, I'm calling my shot with that.
That's a pretty good call. I'm
just curious, and I said this, I phrased this to Tim and Tom, and I'm curious about your take on it. Like, do you think, like, how much do you think the Lakers are going to disrespect his shot tomorrow? Like, do you think, like is LeBron going to play 5 feet off of him, 10 feet? Is he going to do the full, like, Draymond, like, just stand there? No, you go ahead and shoot.
Yeah, if he misses early, LeBron is going to mess around with him a little bit.
Oh, absolutely.
If he breaks his first one or something like that. But if he makes, like, we know this about Danny, by the way, if he makes his first one, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Like, if he makes his first one, you're in for a long night, and please do not disrespect him at that point. I would probably pick the Sixers in this game. The Lakers have been kind of playing with fire, like the Milwaukee game, right? LeBron shoots 6 of 10 in that one from 3-point range. In the Cleveland game, LeBron scores 46 points and again shoots like crazy from 3-point range. And maybe that, like, that's just who he is this season. He's a 40% 3-point shooter. Maybe that's the case. But I think Philly is playing some of the best basketball in the NBA, and Embiid is dominating the sport at a position that if Anthony Davis doesn't quite show up to this one, Avery is thrilled by my prediction, if you can hear her in the background. But if Davis approaches this kind of willy-nilly, right, if he isn't quite ready to body up against Embiid, or if Marc Gasol gets in any kind of foul trouble, the Lakers might be in for a long one. He's been incredible this season, Embiid has. And yeah, I'd probably take Philly in this one.
Is he going to play tomorrow? Because I thought I saw that he missed their last game, right?
I don't know. I haven't heard anything.
I'm going to look this up right now while you continue to talk.
I'm going to go ahead and keep the other thing to look out for. Like, the Lakers have been good against, you know, shooters and stuff like that. So like Seth Curry, I think, isn't somebody I'm particularly concerned about. Ben Simmons has been very good this year at, you know, with the added spacing that they have on that roster. Tobias Harris is also the kind of, like, bigger wing that gives the Lakers some issues. So that's somebody I'm a little nervous about. But the guy that, yeah, like, far and away,
he's not on the injury report. So he most likely will play tomorrow, I would imagine. Seth Curry, nobody significant is, even he's probable. So, like, yeah. It doesn't look like they're going to be. It looks like both of these teams will be mostly at full strength.
Which is great. It might be a fine. Do you think this is a finals preview?
I think it's Dark Horse Finals preview. I don't know that it's necessary. Like, I mean, there are definitely teams that I would pick over the Sixers to make the finals. Like, you know, Nets, Bucks, possibly the Celtics. Yeah, I don't know between those two, but, like, maybe. And so, like, it's a Dark Horse Finals preview for sure, but the Sixers have talent, and Embiid is the type of guy that can win you a playoff series just by dominating his matchup. And, like, look, if the Nets get them in the playoffs, like, like, that's a problem, you know?
He's going,
like,
to average 60.
Yeah, like he's going to average Shaq numbers in that series. Like, they may not win, but, you know, like...
No, I think they would win. I think, you know, he might be good enough to where they just, because they, like, Philly also has the size. Like, Ben Simmons matched up on KD is a pretty good matchup, like, all, you know, by relatively speaking. Yeah, I would probably go ahead and hop out on onto a limb right now and say that as of right now, this appears to me to be the finals preview.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, Philly's playing really, really good right now, really well. And
I will never fully trust Doc Rivers in the playoffs with a team that isn't, like, absolutely stacked and loaded.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like he's gonna have to make decisions that win them games, like, rather than just, like, not lose. And
yeah, it was fun last night after the game. Pete and I were able to, like, laugh at the fact that the Lakers don't have to bash their head up against the wall like Doc did with Montrezl Harrell, when, like, Andre Drummond is the exact kind of player you don't want Harrell on. And we're going to see it stretches tomorrow, because there are some stretches where Harrell is going to play the five, and you just got to hope that that doesn't happen while Embiid is out there. And if it does, it's not going to go very well for Harrell. But it was fun last night to laugh at the fact that the Lakers can actually adjust there, whereas Clippers fans last year were just freaking out because, good God, Doc, why is he still out there?
And look, in the playoffs, like, AD's going to guard those guys, and he's going to turn it on. And, like if Marc Gasol gets in foul trouble, like, they aren't, there's not going to be a situation where it has to be Harrell, barring like injuries or something like that.
It's going to be Caruso.
Yeah. he might do better against some of those guys. Like,
yeah, I honestly, at this point, Caruso's playing so great defensively, I don't know what he can't really do on the court, on that end of the court.
And then, I mean, guard Embiid is the answer. Like, I mean,
I don't know.
Little guy would try his best, but
could you imagine the size disparity there?
Yeah.
Just how ridiculous that would look.
I can see Caruso's face too, just absolutely locked in, like, trying to find an angle, trying to swat the ball away, and then just getting hip checked into, like, the 19th row.
He just looks like a match down there, right? Because his head's all red, just trying to stop.
Yeah.
Just, like, to trying to move him
straight through the stanchion wall behind the basket, like, in the bubble where they're going to end up having to play the playoffs.
Yep. All right. That was Avery telling me that I needed to end this podcast.
You know, this reminds me of longtime Locked On Lakers listeners will remember the ghost cat episode.
You can't hear her?
No, I cannot. So this is like there was one episode of Locked On Lakers early on where Anthony continually was apologizing for his cat being so loud and no one could hear the cat. And so it became known as the ghost cat episode. And this is like the
ghost. She's right here, actually. Oreo is, like, right here off camera. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of the Silver Screen and Roll podcast. It's going to be a fun one. This Lakers-Philly game is going to be a really fun one. Hopefully, it's going to be a really fun one, so long as a certain somebody actually cares. Either way, we're going
to
have that.
You've got to find something to complain about every year. I love it. Like, this is my favorite one of your personality quirks. It's like, it's got to be something. You can't just be happy. It's got to, like, there has to be something that is making you mad.
Yeah.
Like, Dennis Schroeder is your new Rondo, and, like, but then
he's shooting worse than Rondo.
And they're still the number one seed, Anthony.
They are. I say that we have to take all this in context, but I'm allowed to be annoyed at from time to time.
They could be starting the dream team, and you'd be like, well, if Charles
Larry Bird's washed,
get his ass in shape, like, they're winning every game by 40 points, they could win by 50. Like,
well, we'll see. If they lose, I think I'm on postgame tomorrow. So if they lose, you guys are going to hear me complain about the same things that I told you was going to lead to them losing. Until then, have a great rest of your day, everybody. Please be safe, and we'll talk to you after the game.